All right. We are live right now. Are we good? Checking the tech. Yes, we're good. How's it going, everybody out there? Stephen Ignoramus here. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant, episode number 18, 9 o'clock p.m., June the 5th, 2019. So pleased you can be with us. Call Me Ignorant is a live conversation show, whether with an interesting content creator, an expert in a field, a controversial figure, or with a fellow human being trying to spread a message. Call Me Ignorant will try to solve the problems of the world, conversationally speaking. We are streaming right now to YouTube, Twitch, Periscope, Mixer, DLive, and Picarto. If you can't catch the show live, you can find it after the fact on the above-mentioned platforms, also on BitChute and FreedomScoop.com. Call Me Ignorant is also available in podcast format on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean. You can find me on Twitter at IgnoramusSteve. Send me an email at StephenIgnoramus@gmail.com. Topic ideas, questions, and potential guests for the show are much appreciated. My guest today is Wyatt Birkenhoff. He is a recently graduated high school senior, a YouTuber, and the creator of Roundtable Decision, which is a YouTube channel and a Discord server that focuses on politics, philosophy, and debate that he started as a high school project. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant, Wyatt. How's it going today?
Going pretty well.
Doing good?
It's been a busy day, but it's been going well.
What have you been up to today?
Just college. I only had one class today, but it was a history class.
Wow.
So there was a lot of like note taking and trying to figure out what I wrote and to type when I get home. And it was a whole bunch of just random things related to the class. So
What kind of history is it?
It's early American history.
Okay.
So it's from like the 1700s into like the mid 1800s.
Sweet. You just graduated and you started college like today or like in the last
Monday,
week?
Monday, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Two days after I graduated.
Wow. What college are you at?
It's just a community college called Lone Star.
Lone Star? And you're so you're in Texas?
Yeah.
Sweet, man. Cool. That's awesome, man. So yeah, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
So before we get to talking about your work on starting Roundtable Decision and stuff like that, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and stuff like that? What were you interested in before you got into talking about issues and politics, philosophy, and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I guess I could start with like the schooling experience.
Okay.
Because I went to a very small high school, mm-hmm. and it's a private school in Texas, so it's not the typical public education, you could say. But so the school is in the International Baccalaureate program. Most of the audience probably doesn't know what it is, and I didn't know what it is till I was in it.
Okay.
But anyway, they encourage like discussions. So I kind of already like was influenced with that, I guess you could say, as far as discussions, and I learned to really like discussions because it was more of a debate where people would listen rather than a debate where people wanted to win.
Nice.
And then that's what led to me trying to make my channel about more of it being a discussion type of channel than a one side wins all type of thing. So that's kind of how that progressed. But I would say I kind of always was interested in the thing of what my channel is about.
Cool. So did you, like, with your family growing up, did you guys talk about politics, philosophy, stuff, like, at the dinner table and stuff, or was that mostly at your school?
I would say mostly the school. Okay. I mean, we would have some conversations at the dinner table, more with my dad than my mom. But, I mean, we had some conversations. But, yeah, it was mostly at my school where I would say I got into politics.
So I've heard you on two programs so far. I've heard you on J. Edgar's show, Ed's World, and I've heard you on The Generational Gap. And when you were on The Generational Gap, you mentioned something about a class called Theory of Knowledge at your school, and that was kind of an inspiration or something like that. Can you expand on what that class was and the effect it had on you?
So Theory of Knowledge is the philosophy class of the program, and essentially it talks about how we know things or how we get our knowledge and who's our knowledge from. And so, you know, anyone who's taken philosophy or is interested in philosophy knows that it's a question of like how or why more than a question of like when. So it's more of trying to pick a topic. So you could say, like, the sky is blue, and you have to justify your reason of why it's blue, but then you have to ask, why is that reason the reason? So it was kind of a circle type of class.
Epistemology, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's like the how we know what we know and things like that?
Pretty much, yeah.
Cool. Nice. And so you took that class before you started Roundtable Decision? Or is that during the same time?
I took it before and during, I guess you could say.
Okay, cool. Nice. So what about any like other hobbies that you're into before you started this thing, like sports? I think I saw in your profile that you have that you're an Eagle Scout.
Yeah, I was in Boy Scouts, yeah.
Sweet.
I got my Eagle last year.
Nice, man. Yeah, it's one of the things I've always regretted is quitting Boy Scouts. And I don't know, like, some of the people in my school would, like, make fun of people that were still in Boy Scouts by the time they got their Eagle. But now that I'm older, I'm like, these are invaluable skills that people should have. So that's really cool, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about religion? Were you raised in a particular religion, or do you practice a religion now?
Yeah, that's an interesting one there, because we were first Episcopalian as a family, and we were very religious as a family, I would say. You know, we always went to the Sunday Mass. It wasn't just during Easter or, you know, one of the other special holidays, you could say. But when the Episcopalian Church decided to accept gay marriage and like a gay priest or lesbian priest or priestess, I guess you would say. My parents were more kind of worried about that decision. So we still kind of went to the Episcopalian church for a while, but then it bothered them a little more. And so now we are practicing Catholics. And we've probably been Catholics for a year and a half or so, I would say. But in that gap, there was a little bit of inconsistency. But it was kind of like an inner struggle of what to accept as far as what the religion says. Because there was a lot of debate on if, you know, gay priest is a good thing, or is what God intended, or is it not. So it's kind of... I would say I am religious, but you know, you still have your doubts here and there.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, that's it's funny hearing about that, because that's that debate and that struggle goes on kind of the individual level and the family level and at the level of the church, and also on the level of like the global church. I mean, that's a huge debate that's happening in you know, every sect of Christianity right now. And, you know, it's everything from, and it affects millions of people, and just to hear it affect someone's kind of nuclear family, that's, it's, I don't know if it's like close to home or whatever, but it's definitely like you hear about this debate all the time. And you hear about changes in some of the churches in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Have you heard of E. Michael Jones before?
Doesn't ring a bell, no.
Yeah, he's a Catholic scholar, and he talks a lot about that. But yeah, okay, gotcha. So you said you're in college now. You're at a community college, and you haven't like declared a major yet. I mean, you started a week ago, right? So you don't have a declared major, or do you already have a thing you want to study for college?
Yeah, I have a plan. I'm pretty certain that it will be what I have planned, but I'm always open to it changing through, you know, taking the classes what are required for the degree. But right now the plan is to be a teacher, so go to the education field. And ironically enough, I was thinking of doing history or government as one of the possibilities. And high school level is kind of what I've been leaning now, and obviously that could change once I get, you know, hours in the different grades. But, you know, it's all subject to change, like you were saying. But that's kind of the plan.
Cool.
So far.
Nice. So, and you went to a private school, right? Private high school?
Yes.
And so do you kind of, if you got a, you know, if you were to fast forward, you know, 5 or 6 years right now, would you care whether you got, you taught at a private or a public school? Or, yeah, does that make a difference to you?
Not particularly. Just because my school was smaller, I would say I might have a little of a trickier time adapting to a bigger public school, because most of the public schools are pretty big compared to what my school was. So I think I might be better as a private school teacher, but it's not something I would, you know, I think would determine the future as far as that goes.
How big was your school?
Yeah, it was 55 people in upper school.
Wow.
So it's like some classes are that sized or close to it.
Whoa, man, that's super small. That's really cool. So you knew everyone at the school. You could, yeah, if you saw them all in a room, because you name all the people.
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow, that's cool. And yeah, I went to a kind of a small school. It had like, I think, 800 people or something like that. But when I got a little older, people were like, yeah, I went to school with 8,000 people, 6,000 people. I'm like, holy shit. That's too many, man. But that's great, man. So you must have gotten a really good education.
Yeah, I think so. I think they did a pretty good job.
Cool. So, yeah, I don't know. So let's talk about roundtable decision now. So, first of all, I was going through our Discord messages, and I owe you an apology, man. I was looking through our messages, and you sent me a message a year ago inviting me to join your server in, like, March of 2018, and I never responded, never joined up. And it said after one of the reasons I brought it up, because I wanted to ask you about kind of what podcasters you've listened to, what books you've read. And I know that we both have listened to Beauty and the Beta before, like Matt Christensen and stuff. So I see this message and this long message from you, like inviting you, telling me about your project. I was like, oh shit, this is the same guy. So I'm sorry for not getting back to you last year. It's the internet, but you know. But yeah, so tell me about how you heard about Matt Christensen and kind of the effect he's had on you.
Yeah, I think I discovered him on like related YouTubers. You know how you have your like suggestions,
right?
I think he popped up on that. When the first time I listened to him was on his Sunday podcast, and not, you know, the call-in show.
Yeah,
but I think before him, I was listening to YouTubers like Actual Justice Warrior. I don't know if you're aware of him.
No, I heard you talk about him on the Generational Gap, but I haven't looked into it.
Yeah, he just does short like videos of related news topics, you know, from anything from like the Marvel movies to actual like Trump, you know, Russia or whatever you want to say news. But and then it probably could have popped up from Steven Crowder, because I listened to him before I listened to Christensen. But, you know, I've listened to related YouTubers like that. And in particular, I think Christensen is a really good one, because he, I think he stays more on the fair ground than the other YouTubers I've listened to. And that's kind of something I've wanted to do with my channel, because I think the best perspective is probably the middle perspective more times than not. So I think he tries to do that more than anyone else really does.
Yeah, he's very fair, like to a fault even. Yeah, but it's good, because he kind of like represents that space in the sphere. I mean, it's easy to be, I mean, you know, we're not acting over here, but we are kind of in show business, and seems like the people that get a lot of clicks and a lot of, you know, a lot of screen time are the people that have personalities, big personalities, Crowder, people like that. But like, yeah, Matt Christensen is definitely occupies that rational middle, always evidence, you know, talks about numbers. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, sweet. So Roundtable Decision started off as a YouTube channel before a Discord server, right?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. So why'd you go away from that?
Well, I would say it first started on Facebook before it even was on YouTube.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I was more thinking of a discussion-based forum more than a video-based. Because I thought it would be easier, as well as like produce more discussion. Because, you know, videos do get seen, but they're more of a watching than typing, you know, actually having a discussion. But Facebook wasn't exactly working, because I couldn't get enough people to join the group. So it was just kind of going too slow. So I decided I would go to YouTube and start doing some videos. And then a friend suggested that I try Discord. And so then that's when I made the channel and took like a couple months to figure it out. Because, you know, it's a little complicated at first, at least.
Yeah.
And then once that worked, I was able to get some people through my school and just meeting people elsewhere over the internet to the channel what it is now. So Discord's been the biggest thing, I would say.
Yeah. Discord's really cool. And like the number of things you can do with it, number of people you can reach, it can get a little spicy at times, you know, but it's why you make rules and bots and things like that. So I'm a little confused about it. Like you said, it's a project, but did other people at your school, was this just an independent project, or did other people have a similar project and you just picked this as your topic? Like, or did you just branch out on your own and do this? Like, was it assigned? Right. Was it assigned by a particular teacher, or what was that?
It's a mixture of that, I would say, because they have it called CAS, which is like Creativity, Action, and Service. But essentially, it's your community service thing you have to do at the school.
Mm. Okay,
and you had to make a project or do something. So a lot of people would start like a running club or join a gym or teach a class, something like that, for their for that part of the project. And I decided to make a discussion board over, you know, it wasn't really supposed to be political topics, but I was trying to get political topics into it because, you know, that's what people are more passionate about. Therefore, when they're passionate, you know, it creates an actual back and forth more than just, that's right, or, you know, one of the other generic responses.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I think about when I talk to people is, like, you're right that people get passionate about politics and, you know, but at the end of the day, politics is just an extension of culture. And, you know, it's what governs the life and death of a country. It governs the resources of a country. So it seems like people frame it through politics, but it's kind of just issues and values is the thing that matters. And politics is the thing these days that people, you know, a lot of people want it to control everything. So it ends up being a political thing, but it's really like you could boil it all down to just philosophy, you know? So you started it being like you're interested in mainly philosophy and that branched out to politics, correct?
Right. Yes.
Right. Okay. Yes. Gotcha.
Cause I started off with philosophical type of topics.
Mm.
And, I'm thinking of going back to that a little bit because the channel has gone pretty political, but you know, I plan on doing both. But anyway, long story short is it started off with like topics like what is happiness or how do you become happy, you know, and then just generic questions like what philosopher did you like, you know, it started with questions like that.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. A little more abstract stuff. Okay.
Right.
Cool. Other students at the school for this community service, they started different kind of things and you just picked, you know, a discussion board, for lack of a better word, right?
Right, yes.
Okay, cool. Was it, once you started on Discord, how fast was the growth? Like, was it really slow at first and then picked up? It's been a two-year project, right?
Yeah, it's a two-year project, right?
Okay, all right. And so did people join right away on Discord? But like you said, it was people from your school at first, but then you kind of branched out to other people from the internet. So was it slow at first? Like how many people were in the first week?
In the first week, there was probably like three or four. Okay. So it was kind of slower trying to convince someone to agree with my project or like the idea. Because like I think the first person was the cast supervisor, so I don't know if that person really counts.
Yeah, okay.
All they're doing is just making sure nothing happens.
Right.
But and then once I started to actually get people interested, it kind of spread around the school a little bit, and then I was able to go on, you know, internet and more over Facebook and general like other Discord projects like the IB server, which is like the whole server of all of the school districts.
What does IB stand for?
International Baccalaureate.
Okay. Well, okay. So gotcha. Oh yeah. So
it's okay. Like the program, so to speak.
Oh wow.
And it's ward ride. So you have people from like France or Spain or, you know, any foreign country in the server on Discord as well.
Hmm. So now it belongs to you though, and you're going to keep it going, you know, for as long as you want to keep it going, right? It doesn't like belong to the school or belong to the program.
No, it belongs to me. Yeah, right. And now that the project is over, I'll be able to do a little bit more of my own things or what I had planned, instead of trying to get the school to approve each and every project. Because, you know, it wasn't supposed to be political, and I was able to kind of be a little political in some of the discussions, but it took a while to get approved, and now I won't necessarily have to approve it, so that would be nice for sure.
Did you always do like a question of the day, or was that more recent? Was that from the beginning of it, or what?
That was about a third of the way in the project.
Okay.
Because the same friend was suggested to do it on Discord, had that idea, because she kind of was in a server as like a mod for one of the random servers of Discord, and you know, it was more of like a YouTube type of server, small talk or whatever you want to say.
Gotcha.
But anyway, so she suggested having the questions of the days, which I think really helped the channel grow because it produced like daily discussions.
Mm, okay. And so, we've been talking about it for a little bit, and why don't you, for anyone out there that, you know, I have listeners that, and I, you know, people listen to this in the future, and I know I have listeners that are, you know, as young as you and as old as like 70 and stuff. So why don't you give people the quick, you know, 30 to 60 second pitch of what it actually is? I mean, we've covered that it's a high school project and it's like based around discussion. And for everyone out there, Discord is a communications platform where you can do video, audio, and text. But what's your 30 to 60 second pitch, your elevator pitch of Roundtable Decision?
Right. So I would say Roundtable Decision is a discussion board, of which I have a question of the day. And the questions of the day are anywhere from like politics to philosophy. And these questions will also happen during the day. And then I try to do videos here and there. And these videos are also produce discussions. And like recent videos are like how to be happy or mental health, you know, topics that are more broad, but need to be talked about, in my opinion. And so it's just kind of like it's randomized videos on culture, what I think need to be talked about.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. And what are your it sounds like definitely one of your goals is to kind of get people together and just get people talking and cultivate thought and healthy debate and things like that. But what about long-term goals of it? Any specific things you want to achieve or anything like that, that, you know, what's your dream for it?
I would say to be consistent in the videos and discussions, because I guess you could say that's a short-term goal, but I'm not sure where it's going to fall due to being in college now. So I want it to be a short-term, but it may be a long-term. But anyway, it's just to get daily discussions and daily videos on the channel and on Discord, just to create more of a active environment in the Discord project rather than a stagnant, semi-active environment. Mm. So that's kind of my first goal, and I'm not sure if that's really going to be short-term or long-term, but that's kind of the first one.
Okay, nice. And so is there a kind of a specific, I don't know, you said it started off as philosophy and it's branched off to political a little bit, but do you have a specific philosophical ideology or political ideology that you subscribe to?
I'm not sure if I really have a philosophical ideology, but I do probably lean Republican as far as a political party, but I'm not necessarily, you know, full-blown Republican, because I do believe in some of the more liberal type of stances, or the Libertarian Party. So I'm basically, as my philosophy is, the smaller the government, the better. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how you could round that up.
Hear, hear. Yeah, that's a good call right there. And so what if some of the, you know, what are some of the questions of the day that have been brought up lately in the last month or so, because I only joined within the last 30 days, I think, maybe 45. What have been some of the recent questions of the day?
Right. So I've missed a couple recently, which I said that I would have some, but what it's life happens, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
But one of the more recent ones was I asked about the U.S. education system and if you thought the youth of the nation were actually learning are more of a political learning. So, like, do you think the youth of the nation is learning, essentially, is what I asked at public schools. Mm-hmm. And then one of the other discussions, what got a lot of people talking, was I asked about the UK Parliament, about when the elections were happening. I asked what people thought of Sargon and if they thought he would be in the UKIP party by the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that discussion got a lot of heated because a lot of the people in the server argued over Sargon and what he said in the past, and people defended him and not so much offended him. So that was a good one. Another question I had, what was more of a general one, was just about time management and how do you manage your time. So it's just kind of discussions or questions of the days like that.
Okay. So do you mind if I ask you about a few of your takes on those specific questions?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, that works.
So why don't you, I don't know if you want to or if you want me to, but why don't you explain to people who Sargon of Akkad is, and I don't know if you know what his comments were and that whole deal. Like, who's Sargon, what's UKIP, and what controversy came his way for those comments?
Right, so Sargon is a YouTuber, even though you could, and anyway, so he's a YouTuber, and he, at first he was more of a philosophical YouTuber, just talking about philosophical things, mm-hmm. or philosophical topics, or opinions on, like, one of the videos I remember watching was over a movie. I can't exactly remember which movie now, but he was talking about how the troops of this movie, and it might come to mind later, were under this certain type of philosophical leaning, or philosophical party, I guess you could say. And he talked about how that party led to these things happening, and he thought that that's what the director was trying to say in the video. So he did very much videos like that. But he went on another YouTuber's channel where he was debating with some people. I believe it was more than one. And he used the N-word at the channel, or he used it as an example of white people using the word or something usually related to that.
Right.
And long story short, YouTube got aware of it and decided to ban his channel off of using the N-word. And then Sargon defended what he did by saying it was on, like, another person's channel. And in that context, it's not really a bad word or a bad thing, because I was trying to prove my example. And YouTube didn't really want to hear much of it. So, and then long story short, he's had a few other, like, problems some people have called him out for with some of his comments he's had before, such as, like, what I've already said with the white in words. And also, he didn't defend someone at VidCon and rather, like, insulted the person. And they believe that person was the founder of VidCon.
Okay.
So he's done some, like, separate examples some people find as being wrongful.
Yeah, and he made a rape joke too, right? That was the thing.
That might have been what that VidCon insult was.
Okay, gotcha. Because
right. I know it was VidCon related, so okay. That probably was the response there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then he ran for office for Parliament, right? He didn't win, correct?
I don't believe so. Okay. No.
Gotcha. And so
it seems so long ago, but not
yeah.
really.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the crazy things about the internet and news. It's just like, man, a month ago is like a year at this point. And I read some articles about something that happened a couple months ago. I'm like, dude, that seemed like like it was late 2016, but I mean, Trump got elected in late 2016, and that seems like the cutoff point for most shit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Were you old enough to vote in 2018? So this last legislative election in November?
Yeah, I was old enough to vote in the last election. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. How'd that feel? Like it was your first time. I mean, when I was 18, I voted for Barack Obama the first time. And mm-hmm. I remember that feeling pretty cool. I don't know. I was 18. So, did you feel a lot of responsibility there, or was it kind of just like you're way more into serious stuff than I was when I was 18. So did you feel like an extra sense of responsibility doing your project and voting?
Yeah, I was at the time I was like linking up my channel to what I was researching, not so much to be like advocating for people in Texas, particularly or the representative part of where I live in Texas, but I was more just trying to show people how I thought of the process or what I considered to be more important and less important, that type of thing. So I researched, you know, as many of the candidates as I could. And then the actual like voting process was definitely a weird type of feeling. You know, it was good and kind of terrifying at the same time, because they had those electronic machines where you would like turn the wheel, I guess you could call it. And I was always afraid I was going to click the wrong thing or something.
Right, dude. That's so funny. Me too. Yeah, I'm so scared that I'm just going to like click the wrong button and it's going to be some. Yeah. I think that comes from me getting like erasing my own video games on accident when I was a little kid. Like, it's like, do you want to save? Do you not want to save? And you just click the wrong thing. Like, shit. Mm-hmm. So do you mind sharing who you voted for? Or is that who's your congressperson in Texas right now?
Right. So in the last election, I'll start with the representative, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll start with him. His name is Kevin Brady, and essentially he's in charge of, if anyone knows what the representative does, essentially he's in charge of your local area, similar to like what you would think of a mayor as being, is kind of how I think of it. So he kind of runs the part, and you're able to contact your representative for any of the local laws what are getting passed. So he was a Republican, and I voted for him. And as far as the other members, they were mainly Republican-leaning, I would say. I think I voted for one liberal who was the land commissioner. He didn't end up winning, but but the Republican won in his spot. So it was the incumbent who won that spot again. So in our local area, I think it was all Republicans who ended up winning their election.
Gotcha. Okay. And then Ted Cruz beat Beto O'Rourke, which is pretty funny. Right. That Beto,
that was a big one too.
Yeah. It's pretty, I mean, it's a couple things. I mean, first that Beto O'Rourke did as well as he did. That was really surprising. And Texas is turning relatively blue compared to the past, correct?
Yeah, I think they're calling it purple as far as what
okay.
I've been
wow.
hearing in like the local news.
Whoa.
So that it's a mix of the colors. And a lot of them, and I'm sure you probably know this as well, is a lot of it, the theories are that it's all the people coming down from California for cheaper land tax and cheaper taxes in general.
Yeah.
And, you know, that does make a lot of sense. But what doesn't make sense is people coming for cheaper taxes and then voting for people to raise the taxes.
Oh, it's so weird, man. It's so, I can't, it makes my brain hurt, dude. Like, yeah, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, like, at this point, I don't know. I don't know if it's like an empathy thing or like I can't see the other person's perspective, but I can't even understand any reason that anyone would increase the size of government at this point. It's so bonkers. Like, but you know, I that's why I want to get some people on here that want to, because I just want to like just explain your point of view for like 5 minutes and let me think about it for a day, because like I just don't even get it. The bloat is crazy. So, but that's what you said you're mostly about, right? Is shrinking the size of government, small government, right?
Right. That's the main. That's my main philosophy as far as that government goes. Is, you know, the smaller the government, the better. That's kind of the motto, I guess you could say.
Gotcha. Okay. So would you ever, I don't know, would you ever consider running for office or getting involved in politics? I mean, that always starts at the local level and just like maybe volunteering or attending meetings and stuff. But would you ever want to run for office?
I've thought about it here and there, but I'm not sure if it's something I would necessarily want to do. I mean, I think I would enjoy it in some ways, but being a politician is kind of a hard deal to keep with what you believe as well as taking other people's opinions at the same time. Because really, as a politician, you should believe what, you know, everyone tells you to believe rather than what you do believe. Which is kind of a complicated issue, because if you're the one who gets voted in on these issues and you don't pass with those issues, then, you know, people will get mad at you. But if you listen to the people and didn't go with your issues, they're still going to be mad at you.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't really know if I really want to run at like a higher political level, but I have considered like, I guess you could call it like city council or spots like that, or school boards, something like something related to that. I've considered running for in the future.
Yeah, I had a I interviewed someone a couple weeks ago who is he just got elected to city council of Mount Rainier, Maryland, and essentially, I don't know if it's the exact opposite of what you just said, but essentially, I think he was kind of saying the exact opposite of what you said, where it's like, the people elect you and then you kind of have to vote your conscience and stuff like that. It's not that you don't listen to them, but at the end, it's not a direct democracy. So if it was, then everyone would just vote on every issue. But, you know, the person in office essentially has to play their own conscience and their own understanding of the documents that are policy at the time. But that's not a law. You know, it essentially depends on the way you think about politics and stuff. And yeah, that's an interesting perspective. What about the youth of the nation, the learning of the youth of the nation question? I mean, you're part of the youth of the nation at this point. I'm not sure when that cutoff point is. You know, I'm 31. I'm not sure when you become unyouthful anymore. But do you think do you think people are learning in general at a good rate and people are woke, so to speak? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I'll just take the local level since I know more about that than in general. In Texas, the literacy rate is extremely lower than what it should be. I can't remember the exact statistic now, but I want to say it's in like the 50s. Or I can look it up real quick to see if I can find it.
Sure. Yeah, that's
but
fine.
It's extremely lower than what it should be, because like during the American Revolution, the literacy rate was extremely high because everyone wanted to learn. You didn't want your colonists to be, for lack of the better words, dumb.
Yeah, I mean, the people back in those days had an amazing vocabulary. I mean, but writing was, you could kind of compare writing and reading back then to like computer literacy now, though. It's like more of a skill that you used for mass communication, and now it's kind of being able to do stuff online and be able to, I don't know, like maybe not program, but just like know how to click around a website and, you know, times change. I don't even know. I feel like a good literacy rate would be 100%. You know, I wonder what
it is. You would think that would be, you know, your goal.
We got some people on the chat. Iamafago says politics is downriver of culture. I believe that's an Andrew Breitbart quote. Iamafago says the most important question ever asked is why, and the second most is how. And he also says we're old, Stephen, probably. Yeah. So are you looking up that?
To find it. It says it's 45th. In the States.
Oh.
So that's very low.
Very low.
As far as the state level.
Gotcha.
This one, according to Literacy Council of Tyler, it says it's 51% of the adults in Texas can read at the eighth grade reading level.
Ooh.
And
damn.
23% read at below the fifth grade.
Damn. Okay.
So those are kind of brief numbers, and those statistics could not be, you know, the main ones.
Yeah.
But it's something what I was able to find.
Well, it's an interesting, it's an interesting thing of like, you know, literacy is definitely important, but it seems like maybe ability to critically think is a little more important, but they probably go hand in hand.
Yeah, a little bit, I would say.
Yeah.
And then as far as the Texas, it's the literacy rate is determined by the STAR test, which is the standardized test Texas students have to take in public school.
Okay.
And essentially, it's your reading level is graded on that test. Mm. And under the No Child Left Behind Act, the literacy rate was supposed to be essentially 100%, and it never got really 100%. And then Obama passed a bill in his presidency to kind of say if you improve that, you know, you've done your job as a teacher, essentially. So that's helped the literacy rate if you track it. But like I've said, I don't think the public school system is really doing its job as best as it could, because it seems like they're not focused on areas they should be. Because in particular in Texas, I just mentioned that standardized test. And I think that it's harming the students because the teachers ultimately rely on that test to determine their future. Because if their students get bad grade on that test, they can be fired due to what could happen to the school. So like one of the schools in the area got audited by the Texas Agency of Education. And essentially they have people there who staff the teachers and make sure that they're doing their job. Essentially they're micromanaging the teachers to get these test scores up. So all of it's revolved around one single test. And I'm not sure how you necessarily fix that system of a standardized test, but I don't think that that's really really educating students as it should be.
Yeah, it's a hard one to manage. I mean, are you a fan of there being a Department of Education, like a federal baseline for this, or do you think it should be more state and local?
I mean, in general, I would agree on the state and local as far as it goes. But with the example of Texas, when Obama left it up to the state, Texas decided to keep the standardized test for their system of checking students.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily agree with that. So it's kind of like, in a way, I would think that one single way of testing all of the states could be good. But I don't necessarily think that it should be determined by, you know, one agency to do it. So ultimately, I do think it should be by the state level, even if the state makes the wrong choice.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's really hard to be balanced when you want just smaller government. Because for me, I'm kind of an anarchist, kind of a libertarian. I don't really know what to say, but like, to me, I just want to be like fuck it, roll it all back, disband every agency, just protect the border. And I don't know, that spooks people. And I don't even know if what I'm saying would work, but I kind of agree with you, what you just said, where it's like, even if it's the wrong choice, it gets handled on a smaller level, and it's in the hands that are of the people that are closer to it and care about it more. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Gotcha. So what about, I saw a question on Roundtable Decision about gun control. Is the current, I don't remember what the actual question was, but basically is the current gun control policy in America and in the States working? But do you have any strong beliefs on whether that's, I mean, obviously there's a lot of gun violence. There's a lot of mass shootings, or at least, it appears that there is. I don't know if they're more publicized or what, but what are your thoughts on gun control?
Right. So, funny enough, is I'm planning to have a video out on gun control tomorrow.
Cool. Nice.
And on my channel.
Nice.
But essentially, I researched a question on Google of how do you fix gun control in the United States? It was a similar question. I think that was the actual question.
Yeah, I think it was. You're right. Yeah.
And essentially, I took the top sites and see what they had to say. And I agreed with a few of the sites, and one of the sites in particular was talking about more of a approach on the views of gun problems, of gun suicide, rather than the actual, like, mass shootings. So it was basically saying that although mass shootings are a horrible event, our focus should be more on trying to prevent smaller gun violence from happening. So either it being, you know, local shootings between, you know, gang members, or just murder in general, or suicide. And in particular, it was mentioning mental health. And although mental health is kind of a hard topic to talk about, or hard to, like, pin down, I do think that more research on mental health would be better and would have a direct effect on guns in particular. Because as far as, like, the gun laws we have now, I'm really in favor of. I don't think I really have an issue with any of the laws that are in place now for guns. I think it just, we need to think about it. We need to think about it differently for it to be fixed. So although I don't know if mental health is the right approach, I do think that it might have a direct response to it, I guess you could say.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, it definitely seems like it's both, if you're talking about small gun violence, mass shootings, and suicide, the link between all of them is mental health. And it depends on how you define mental health. And like you said, it's hard to pin down because, you know, then we can get back to the philosophical thing, like what is peace of mind? What is fulfillment? What is happiness? What is, yeah, and so mental health is kind of just a label that was put on those things by academics and people that study it. So, and it seems like if you fix the culture, you fix those things a little bit. I mean, you're never going to get rid of those problems.
Right. That's the big thing is with culture is that's kind of what I was trying to explain, is that it's more of, we should try to fix the people's thoughts about it more than trying to pass laws to fix it.
Yeah, for sure. And it seems like that's, you know, even what I'm about to say has become a cliche, but that's what, you know, people's brain goes straight to the big fix. It goes straight to the daddy upstairs. And that's what I feel is one of the biggest problems about the culture, is that see a problem, it's got to be government. And not only that, it's got to be the federal government, which has, you know, the biggest guns, the biggest nukes, and ability to, you know, coerce people's resources through taxes and all kinds of other things. And that seems not right, is how quick people go to that spot to fix it, you know.
Very much we're very big on thinking big as far as that goes,
right? And it's like you can change things from the top, I guess, but, you know, really the best way to do it is change it from the bottom. I mean, if every citizen takes care of their own responsibility, that solves most things. And most people that are younger, like you, seem to understand that. It's a lot of people that are my age and older that either don't get that or just don't agree with it. So I'm like, what's there not to agree with? Like, I don't get it. But are most people you've talked to your age, do they think small like that? Or have you met a lot of people that want to swing for the fences?
Yeah, I would say that there's a... In general, I would say most of my, like, friends and people I've met are more kind of think smaller than larger. Yeah. But, I mean, there's always the few that do think large instead of smaller. And, like, in general, I think as a human race, what we kind of already hinted on is, you know, we're very entrepreneur as Americans. And so, like, the idea of creating something big has always kind of been there since the start. Because that's kind of how America got founded.
Yeah, true.
The Puritans wanting to create something bigger than what they could imagine, essentially. So I do think that it's, like, ingrained into the core of America. But I think in general, the best approach is to think small to reach the big, I guess you could say.
Sure. Yeah, so that's actually a good transition to what I was going to ask you next. I mean, we just talked about thinking small, or whether it's big or small. What positive effect do you want to have on the world? I mean, everyone kind of wants to have the most positive effect that they can, but if you could fix a couple problems and leave your mark on the world, I mean, you're so young, what problems would you tackle, or what do you, what specific effect do you want to have on the world?
I would say changing the thought of mental health, because a lot of mental health comes with the stigma of it being a topic what's hard to approach or hard to understand. And although it is a complex issue, I don't think it's as hard as many people think it is, because a lot of people aren't willing to put research into what actual mental health problems or mental health concerns there are. You know, they're not willing to look at what a depressed person actually feels or what they actually experience, you know, in their mind more than just their feelings. You know, so it's just kind of, if I could change something, it would be more of just the thoughts of the people around me about mental health. And although I haven't really gone through any of like serious mental health conditions myself, I don't think you really necessarily have to understand what the people experience who have those issues, you know, like PTSD, you know, depression, anxiety, things like that.
Yeah, I always wonder about that. On like, so do you, when you say study mental health, do you mean at the academic level? I mean, I guess, is there another way to study it? Well, I mean, there's many ways to study things, but ability to organize the research and ability to catalog it and make sense for a bigger population. Do you mean on the academic level? And so would you like to study things like that in school?
I guess you could say there's case studies out like on what you can find on mental illness and things like that. So I would say I don't necessarily want to make a case study myself as far as that goes, like research it with somebody as like, you know, for a degree, so to speak. I more want to get people's actual experience with it and try to kind of think about what commonalities are with each and try to like brainstorm it in that way. And you know, you're not necessarily going to find something what fits for all, but kind of find something what would work for most is kind of what I was more trying to talk about.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's cool, man. So so the way people think about mental health and thinking, like you said, shrinking the size of government. Cool, man. Nice. So you know, we talked earlier about, you know, Matt Christensen and Actual Justice Warrior. I really like that name, by the way. I like that. That's a good play on words. But what other books, thinkers, and like personalities have influenced you thinking this way up to this point?
Right. I would say, as far as books goes, I don't necessarily agree with his philosophies, but Friedrich Nietzsche and any of his stuff he's written, as far as philosophical events, I think he's really influenced the way I've kind of thought about it from a different side, because I don't really come from his side of thinking. And reading his stuff, although it's very extreme at times, or many people think it's extreme, I don't think he's really a extreme type of person, really. I think he was very much trying to understand his outermost thoughts, and I think he's one of the best at actually being able to show what he was thinking rather than tell what he was thinking. And, you know, as far as like TV goes, you always want to see something rather than be told what's going on. So I think he was able to, you know, you were able to see it rather than be told, as other philosophers were trying to do. So he was a big one. And I would also say, like, C.S. Lewis and his books were also a pretty big process of how I was able to think more in a the way I think now, I guess you could say.
So yeah, that's one of the things that, you know, if before you read Nietzsche, is, you know, a lot of people, I mean, you could make an argument that he was a little bit of a nihilist, but like people are like, oh yeah, Nietzsche nihilism. But he was, what he was trying to do a little bit is explain what nihilism was and explain that it was coming, or even that it was here. But he, you know, I don't think, you know, nihilism is nothing matters, essentially. But a guy that writes like that doesn't think that nothing matters. I mean, he tried to go, he went deep into the, you know, dark realms of thought. So, you know, I enjoy his writing. Like you said, even though, even if you don't, you know, agree with everything he's saying, which is also its own cliche. Who agrees with everyone that anyone says?
Right. Yeah. You know, that would, like, be kind of weird.
Yeah. It's like a weird disclaimer that people put forth online. Like, oh, I don't agree with everything this guy says, but it's like, yeah, like, no shit. Like, why do you need to say that? But it's like, it's mostly used as like a disavowal of a person's personality. Like, if, you know, like, I don't agree with everything Hitler says. I don't agree with everything that, you know, Robert E. Lee says or whatever, you know, but, that'd be really strange if we all agreed. I can't name one person that I agree with everything they've said. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are some people, what about people online now? What about, other personalities other than like Matt Christensen, people you follow on the internet now?
I would say as far as like online now, you know, the YouTubers I mentioned, I get most of my like news and thoughts from, but, in general, I would say that I read a lot of like, conservative type of news.
Okay.
So I don't particularly like Fox News or any of like the mainstream news networks.
Yeah. It's rough.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. It's really rough. Yeah.
Okay. So there's this one conservative site what I'll go to occasionally to read actual news of what they say. And as well as, you know, even though it's not necessarily news now, like, I do read a lot of like news as far as like movies go, as far as like entertainment industry goes. Mm-hmm. And so there's this channel and website called Nerderotic.
Nerderotic,
yeah, okay. What just talks about, it's more entertainment based, but he writes about like movies and what's happening in the movies and a lot of like how politics has entered into movies.
Mm.
And so it's something that I'm also kind of passionate about, is how entertainment industry is a lot of like what normal people watch. And if it becomes the norm in entertainment, then it will become the norm in everyday life. As far as it goes. So it's something I've paying extra attention to more than probably most people, I would think.
Wow. Yeah. That's overlooked a lot. Yeah. A lot of people, I mean, the big part of culture is like Hollywood TV and celebrities and sports. When I look up news, I still just go, when I do my daily show, I just go on AP and,
AP is a very good site.
Yeah, it's very, very good. But they have a lot of sports and movies and stuff like that. And while I wish they wouldn't, it's a big player in the culture. And the people that control that, they control a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So say that. Is it Nerderotic?
Nerderotic.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. Okay, cool. I'll write that down. Nice. So I guess we're going to wrap up pretty soon. But what, you know, we talked off air before the show started about today was I don't know. People are using the hashtag YouTube purge and thousands. So first of all, a bunch of I'll give people the background. But this all started with a controversy with a Vox writer and Steven Crowder. And Vox writer called for Steven Crowder to get demonetized. And I think that's happened now. But I think he called for Steven Crowder's channel to get taken down, which YouTube didn't do. But one of the things this person said was that, you know, Steven Crowder and specific people aren't the problem. It's kind of the culture of extremism and things like that. And, you know, we've been having this this big tech censorship debate for a couple years now. So I guess what I'm mainly asking is there's been a debate amongst people about whether government should step in and, you know, regulate social media censorship, or, you know, are they just a private company? Are they a platform? So what are your thoughts on big tech censorship and where to go on now that people are getting banned, censored, and, you know, demonetized?
Yeah, censorship is a big issue or concern what a lot of us have. And, you know, it kind of started with Facebook in general as far as that goes. And Facebook was kind of the first trial of censorship. But in general, I think it should be up to the private company and what they believe more than the government getting involved.
Okay.
Because if the government does get involved and says, you know, these guidelines are what you have to use to that private company, what's stopping them from doing that to another private company? Even though it might not be as important, I guess you could say, as it being online. And since so many people do get their news or their ideas from these people, more than they would at, let's just say, you know, a coffee shop or something, if the government were to get involved there. But censorship in general, as I've said before, should be censored from that private company. But at the same time, they shouldn't be allowed to be a free-for-all on their censorship without any guidelines what are clearly understood. Because, you know, even though I'm not a lawyer, lawyers are supposed to, even though, okay, I'll start it this way. Lawyers are complicated because at one point they want you to understand everything was in the contract, but at the other point they want you to miss something they can get you on later. So that's something they're wanting you to miss as far as, you know, the corporate culture goes, is that, is YouTube making their guidelines or their rules slightly confusing or slightly mishandled or, you know, like,
yeah, vague,
not understood?
Yeah,
very vague.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
They don't really tell you much so that they can use one of the other sentences in their guidelines on like the 50th page or whatever it would be to demonetize the people for something they didn't really even realize was on there. So that's kind of always been in contracts or in, you know, conditions before.
Right.
But it, in particular with online, I think it should be more easier to understand than other businesses. Because you're dealing with creators like yourself and myself who aren't lawyers, who aren't having, you know, 15 lawyers read over these papers. You know, the 50th line of the 12th page is something that might get them later. You know, so it's kind of a tricky situation there too.
Yeah, I mean, and it gets even trickier when they update them. I mean, you've already signed the terms of services, and then they update them and you don't sign them again. So basically you're I don't know, it's one thing to sign a contract, it's one thing to be like, I've signed all future contracts, and you know, that's, yeah, it, you know, one thing I've been saying for a while, I don't remember who I heard it from, but there's not one person in the country that can, that understands all the laws. Even the best lawyer, the, you know, 80-year-old lawyer who has 60 years of experience doesn't understand every law and every policy. And it seems intentional. Whether the government steps in or not, it just seems like these companies can do whatever they want. And they have so much power, and when they're multinational, they have more power than the government sometimes. I mean, they don't have the monopoly on violence. They don't have the ability to lock someone up, but they do have a tremendous amount of power. So I understand why it's a big debate, I guess is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's very complicated, because if, you know, who's going to make them make these guidelines easier for, you know, it's not going to be the company themselves, because the company wants the guidelines to be blurry or unable to understand so that they can do what they want, because they're the company which should be able to do what they want. So, you know, a lot of people think that the only people able to do it is the government. But as soon as the government gets involved, it's kind of that slippery slope.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why if I had to vote on it today, or if I had to make a decision today, I would say, I would agree with you that government shouldn't regulate it, just because what about the next company? What about the next controversy? And that means they always have their foot in the door to regulate stuff, but there's limited options there. There's the government regulate it. There's the company police themselves. There's people who have been, have been treated unfairly or kicked out can start their own company, which costs millions of dollars. And there's limited options there. I mean, you could go to a park bench and just talk, you know, but that's not going to get out to, you know, thousands of people. But it's, I don't know, it's very complicated, like you said. Do you plan to, if you get 1,000 subscribers like overnight, would you monetize on YouTube even though there's a risk of your channel getting taken down? Not necessarily that you're talking about anything like, I don't know. I guess the reason I'm kind of stumbling over my words is this whole thing is over the issue, what they're claiming is the issue of hate. And that's completely subjective. And it seems like to me that that's like a human right, is like your right to hate something. Like that's part of speech. So how would you act on that if you had your channel monetized and then all of a sudden you got strikes for hate just for criticizing something? How would you handle that?
Right. I mean, it's hard to say, because a lot of the YouTubers who are getting monetized or channels removed are trying to talk with YouTube to understand why, and YouTube doesn't really tell them why. So it's hard to say, you know, how you would win the battle, so to speak. But to answer, you know, your first question on if I would, I don't know if I really would want to monetize the channel, because it's not really something I'm making the channel to get money for. Now, obviously, that could change, you know, if you get like a lot of subscribers. But, you know, it's not something I am planning to do, I guess you could say.
Yeah. And it's so far-fetched for someone like under 100 subscribers or under 200 subscribers. It's like, I might as well win the lottery or some shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right. Interesting, man. I think that's about all the time we got. But I don't know if people have asked, someone in the chat says, does Wyatt have a link to his Discord server in the description of your videos? So how can people find that other than linked in this video? But is it available publicly, or how do you get that message out?
Right. A lot of my Discord link is on any of the social media profiles I have on Twitter, Gab, and Minds, and any of the other platforms I'm on, but it's also on my YouTube channel, and that may be the easiest place to find it.
Okay.
At Roundtable Decision, and it's linked in all my videos there. So as long as you just click on one and go to the discussion, you should be able to find the channel link there as well.
All right, awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on. It was good to talk to you, and definitely invite everyone to join that server, get involved in the discussion, and thanks for coming out today.
Alrighty, thank you for having me.
All right, cool, man. Thanks, everyone. I want to thank everyone for checking out Call Me Ignorant today, and also the ones who check us out after today. You can find this uploaded to YouTube, BitChute, and FreedomScoop.com as a video, and Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean as a podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at IgnoramusSteve. Send me an email at StevenIgnoramus@gmail.com. If you feel like supporting the show, you can send me some crypto, donate some Lino points on DLive, send me a tip at PayPal.me/StevenIgnoramus. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. My guest today was Wyatt Birkenhoff, and you can find his information in the show description. Have a fantastic day, everybody. Go inform yourselves.